From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Residents of the Parisian suburb of Saint-Denis were awakened by a series of explosions and exchanges of gunfire at approximately 4:30 a.m. Wednesday, as French police and military continued their hunt for those allegedly behind last Friday's attacks in Paris. At least 50 soldiers were reportedly deployed at the scene of the police operation. There were reports that a female suicide bomber blew herself up. French authorities launched dozens of anti-terror raids across the country following the coordinated Paris attacks on Friday that killed at least 132 people and wounded hundreds more. The raids have reportedly resulted in dozens of arrests and seizures of weapons. Belgium also carried out anti-terror operations Monday in the Brussels suburb of Molenbeek, which the media has dubbed a European jihadist hotspot. Officials have said that both Salah Abdeslam and Abdelhamid Abaoud, who are being sought as suspects in the Paris attacks, were based in the area. Meanwhile, the president of the Czech Republic, Miloš Zeman, addressed a rally of supporters organized by the so-called Bloc Against Islam, an anti-Muslim group, as that country marked the 26th anniversary of the so-called Velvet Revolution Tuesday. Zeman tried to assure the crowd of several thousand people that they weren't extremists. The event took place at a university campus where the anti-communist uprising began in 1989. Riot police separated those at the rally from a counter-demonstration. Although the media's attention might favor one atrocity over another, that attention has little impact upon the victims whose pain and suffering exists nevertheless. One example is last week's double suicide bombing allegedly perpetrated by ISIS affiliates in Beirut's suburbs that left at least 44 dead, more than 250 wounded, and deep division in its aftermath. CCTV's Stephanie Freed was in Lebanon's second largest city, Tripoli, and filed this report.
Tripoli, Lebanon's second biggest city. Serene for now. Factional Sunni versus Alawite fighting driven by events unfolding in Syria routinely erupts here. The remnants, pockmarked buildings, images of victims sniped by the other side.
To the untrained eye, the dividing line in this city is almost imperceptible, save this Lebanese flag. I'm at a checkpoint and the razor wire at the same checkpoint. There are some Lebanese military personnel in front of me, just a few meters in front of me. We can't show them on camera, nor can we show the heavily armed APC with gunner that's also a few meters in front of me. This side behind me is pro-Assad government. A few meters in front is anti.
The anti or Sunni side is a network of alleyways that even the Lebanese army hesitates to enter. Sheltered inside these rundown buildings, Syrian opposition militants, including a growing number of ISIL affiliates.
The Americans and Russians aren't involved in the Middle East, but they have helped in the proxy war in Syria and Iraq. We are doing the same.
The pro-Syrian government side, looking down on the Sunnis in the valley, has a clear strategic advantage. Here, there is more wealth. But this side also bears the scars of fighting. Lebanon is often referred to as a proxy country controlled by interests of governments beyond its borders. Tripoli is one microcosm of Lebanon's larger political position. Stephanie Freed, CCTV, Tripoli, Lebanon.
At least 32 people were killed and 80 wounded after an explosive device went off at a market in the northeastern Nigerian city of Yola. That, according to a Red Cross official, the numbers were later confirmed by an official from Nigeria's National Emergency Management Agency. It was unclear as of Wednesday who was responsible for the blast, but the armed group Boko Haram has carried out several attacks in Yola in the past, including suicide bomber attacks and other bombings. Two members of Saudi Arabia's security forces were killed Wednesday after gunmen opened fire on their vehicle in an eastern province. An Interior Ministry spokesperson told the Saudi state news agency SPA that a security patrol in the province of Qatif came under fire at 1 o'clock Wednesday morning. Pakistan's Interior Ministry announced Wednesday that it is suspending a 2009 repatriation agreement with the EU and will now refuse to accept anyone deported from mainland Europe. An estimated 90,000 people were deported to Pakistan from around the world last year, in some cases, according to Pakistani officials, without a proper determination that they were Pakistani nationals. The suspended EU-Pakistan agreement allowed EU member states to repatriate undocumented immigrants from Pakistan and those of other nations who transited through Pakistan on their way to Europe. As French security forces conduct raids throughout Muslim neighborhoods in the country and Islamophobia rears its head across the European continent, missing from the narrative is the role of France and other European nations as imperial powers in Middle Eastern countries like Syria. Sarah Flounders is an organizer with the International Action Center. She spoke with CPR's Bernard White via telephone from New York Wednesday.
Can you help us to go backwards? What are some of the events that might have led to this kind of attack in Paris?
That's probably the key question, and I hope that should be on everyone's mind, kind of what led to this. Because the French government, French imperialism, is at war with the world in ways very similar to U.S. imperialism, and has been taking part in the bombing in Syria, in Iraq, and through many countries in Africa, from Central African Republic to Mali to Chad to Libya. On the other hand, the French population, by about 70%, is opposed to these wars. And so there's a real divide there, as there is here. And it's important to see and to know how much the French people are against the wars and yet how deeply involved the French government is in the wars, and particularly in the effort to pull down and absolutely destroy the state of Syria as they were earlier to destroy Libya. And they're really at the front of the kind of the howling pack of forces attempting to do this. So that it's important to have for background information, and also the way in which these very powerful forces in France and around the world are attempting to use what happened in Paris and the real sympathy for it, because it's horrible and everyone can identify with whether sitting in a cafe, a stadium. You know, the idea of suddenly a concert hall being absolutely shot up and the 125, 129 people who were killed, hundreds injured. So it certainly riveted the attention of the whole world. But see, then it's seized upon as an opportunity to whip up a really racist and anti-immigrant and anti-Muslim hatred. And that is the first step in a war mobilization. I think everyone here knows the way in which 9/11 was seized on as part of the whole drumbeat and justification relentlessly raised for war in the U.S. and Afghanistan and later in Iraq, the very countries that had nothing to do with the war or the decision to target. Very interesting even to see the number of folks who were born and raised were Belgian citizens. Now, of course, France isn't going to go bomb Belgium. No, they're going to use it as an opportunity to bomb Syria. Now, the effort to absolutely destroy Syria and impose regime change, impose a new government, has been at the back of giving a great deal of support for this sort of outside opposition forces, including ISIS, the Islamic State. Standing for ISIS, Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, or it's also called ISIL, Islamic State of Iraq and Levant, or Daesh, its initials. So people are hearing it referred to in different ways. But the effort is really to use absolutely reactionary forces who are for sectarian division, who are against Syria as a multi-ethnic, multi-religious, secular state, a very modern state, and to completely destroy and divide it. So there's a wink and a nod, a huge financing, funding, and equipping of this opposition force, and at the same time claiming that there is a fight against the Islamic State. And very much an approval and almost a coordinating with Saudi Arabia, with Jordan, with Turkey, of all of these opposition forces, including ISIS, because they were carrying out something that the U.S. and the French wanted, which was the destruction of Syria. But there's blowback that happens when forces like this are equipped and funded and supported, and everything is done to allow them to thrive, because they wanted to recolonize, absolutely destroy, pull apart countries in the region. And I very much would put Iraq and Syria and Libya in on the forces that the West wanted to destroy, because they had done so much with the oil resources in a different period based on revolutionary upheavals internally. And they weren't under the thumb of the West. Their oil was nationalized, and so they were really, in many ways, extremely modern states, absolutely denounced in the West as being dictatorships. But when you look at who is the U.S. allied with, Saudi Arabia, for heaven's sakes, there's no interest in democracy at all. So anyway, this is just, this is not to say that the attacks aren't absolutely outrageous and terrible, but to understand that the background for it, who has funded and supported these very groups, and then when there's an attack like this, utilizes it to whip up a racist, anti-immigrant, and anti-Muslim attack. And that's what's been happening in the media, where there is this outpouring of support for France, and at the same time, no mention of, no sorrow, no mourning for very similar attacks that have taken place in Beirut, or other things that were a huge loss of life, the downing of the Russian plane. More people died there than in Paris, also supposedly carried out by ISIS. And of course, the very wars that are behind this have been the loss of millions of lives. U.S. war in the region has literally ripped apart, shredded whole countries, creating huge instability. So anyway, I'm sort of linking several things together here, and it's important maybe to spend a little time on each, but I think that's a background to it, to the way in which the media utilizes it, and also what leads up to these attacks.
I think those linkages are important. They need to be made. I'd like to talk a little bit about these opposition forces and the evolution of these opposition forces, because that is part of the strategy, part of U.S. foreign policy, that they would fund opposition forces. They did it in Latin America. They do it wherever there is a conflict. They fund these opposition forces. And then in many instances, they then go back and kill the opposition forces.
Very much so. These are absolutely to both use and then dispose of forces. Now, at this point, it seems that there's really going to be an attack on ISIS. But when you think about it, the U.S. claims to have been supporting bombing ISIS for a year, and yet being unable to hit them. Now, Putin gave an interesting press conference at the end of the G20 talks. It's worth looking at what he said, because he really challenged the West as to how phony this war was. And he had photos, you know, in his hand. He said, here are 1,000 trucks stretching into the horizon, oil trucks coming from the ISIS-held areas to markets in Turkey. Why aren't they stopped? 1,000 trucks you can see from satellite. You can see it from anywhere and well known. And the funding of it and the paying and all of the, you know, this is a business with more than $500 million a year flowing into ISIS. And nothing is being done about it. And that very day, for the first time, finally, after a year of bombing, supposedly claiming they were trying to destroy ISIS, for the very first time, the U.S. hit some of these tankers. Now, it's interesting even the way in which they did it. It was described in yesterday's New York Times that they first flew over twice, dropping leaflets announcing they were doing it, and then flew over again with rattling some machine guns to get all the drivers out of the trucks and to safe area, and then came back around and took out about a third of the trucks. Now, that's very interesting, because at the same time, the French and the U.S. claiming that they were going after ISIS in a city, an entire city that ISIS was holding, Raqqa, managed to bomb, again, a hospital, government centers, a library, a museum, without any warning. And those were areas where civilians were killed. So there's this, I'm just describing to you, one is an article in Common Dreams describing some of the civilian targets that were hit, no warning, and the New York Times yesterday describing U.S. warplanes strike ISIS oil trucks in Syria. That was the headline. So it shows the way in which they go to war against forces they really don't want to do too much damage to, because they want these forces to destroy Syria first. And a lot of the bombing that the U.S. and the French, and they're not the only forces the U.S. brought in before Russia came into this. Before Russia came into it, the U.S. had brought 13 countries into the bombing of Syria. And most of what they were doing was destroying the infrastructure of Syria. It's left half of the population displaced. 7 million are displaced within Syria, and 3 million Syrians outside of Syria. In Lebanon, are desperately trying to get into Europe, in Jordan, and in Turkey. So this is what the U.S. and the French, and actually here's Saudi Arabia and Australia and Canada was part of it, and Belgium and the Netherlands, and it's a long list, 13 countries, all taking part in the bombing of Syria, all claiming they're going after ISIL. And not one of them, the U.S. does the targeting, is hitting the oil trucks that are part of the funding, or actually hitting any of the command centers. Instead, they're destroying what's absolutely essential civilian and infrastructure and so on. So the cover story of they're going after terrorists and the reality, even as they describe it themselves, we can see is very, very different. And at the same time, the justification becomes an anti-Muslim campaign right here and everywhere else in the West, and becomes a campaign against completely desperate refugees just trying to seek safe harbor in the midst of this war. The level of hypocrisy on this is so great, coming from the military strategists and the command centers that want to destroy any country that has sought an independent policy. And that was why there was such rage, such anger, when Russia came into the war.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't coordinate their targets through the U.S. And you can imagine if Saudi Arabia, who's actually helping to organize these bands, is part of also knowing the coordinates of what's going to be hit.
The Western so-called democracies seemed to be embarking on a policy of destabilization and regime change. And with something that is obvious to anyone who's watching that, what's going on in the world and the U.S. foreign policies, as what their joint foreign policies. And yet media doesn't give us that picture at all.
Not even a little bit. And it's actually why alternative media is so essential to even hear, to even get a picture of what is happening in the world. But the role of the media is to try to line up the population at home against whoever is targeted. And not to even allow a real discussion of what's taking place. It was really amazing. Within 10 minutes of the attacks in Paris, every talking head, every politician knew exactly the line they were going to take. And the news media, they know immediately the script and how to respond, of both wringing, clenching sympathy for the victims, heartfelt stories, and then description of justifying French bombing. As I say, it's not that the French are going in, or the U.S. is going in, or the Saudis, Australia is taking part of bombing Syria right now, a whole series of the NATO countries, and not really striking ISIS, all claiming to be there. They're going to revenge the attacks. And they are determined instead to try to destroy Syria. Mm. Now, in that way, also, Russia going in is genuinely a game changer, because they have hit some of these opposition forces that were right on encircling both Damascus and have been laying hold of Aleppo for 4 years. And I just want to say, because I've been to Syria twice during this time, and you see Damascus, and having been there in an earlier time, once a city so modern, beautiful, developed, and at the same time ancient. Damascus and Aleppo are considered two of the oldest continuously lived in cities in the world, where they've been population centers for 5,000 years. So there's both ancient artifacts and ancient markets and ruins and modern city. And then you see what it is today after so much destruction. And I think so many people listening now have seen the pictures in the newspapers. The groups that hold Aleppo which is right on the Turkish border, half the city is held still by the government after all these, after 4 years of war, and half by these, what they call the democratic opposition, which are really gangs that come in and loot whole parts, entire, every factory, every industry in the, quote, democratic opposition held part of Aleppo. And as I say, it's not democratic at all. But these are really both fanatics, and they're also mercenary gangs. They have completely looted the city, taken whole factories, and they're just crated and carted across the border and sold for scrap in Turkey. And that's everything from lampposts to factories to copper cord to anything, anything that can be literally taken out of buildings and resold. The entire the city is a skeleton. Now, the Syrian government says, how many fighters are there like this in Syria? They put the number, and this is backed up in, of course, all the press here also, at about 100,000, 100,000 to 120,000 of different mercenary and also extreme sectarian fanatical forces. Some there on an extreme religious basis, and some simply because there's the mercenaries at every conflagration, they know it's a paycheck. The opposition is well paid and equipped and trained, and so it becomes a magnet. There's 1,000 different bands operating in Syria today of different opposition forces. Back and forth between some are al-Nusra Front and some are ISIS and so on, and other different forces, and all kinds of shifting alliances. But all with the purpose of they want to pull down Syria. And you have, as I say, all these displaced people who overwhelmingly flow to the government-held areas, because at least they know there'll be social services there. And that's important. I mean, families seeking to flee, either flee to Turkey or Jordan, or flee to Damascus and the safe-held areas. And there, I mean, in Damascus, every public building, every school, every library, community center, mosques, churches, every possible building almost, it seemed, had become a center for refugees, with the government desperately trying to both maintain not only food programs, but schools and health care and immunization, and also social programs. I mean, you have children totally dislocated from everything that's familiar. How do you keep them from being traumatized? It becomes, especially, we were in community centers where they tried to have teenage and college students acting as mentors to younger children, so the children would be less traumatized by the war surrounding them. But that is a huge burden to take care of almost half the population who's been displaced in the war. And even people who may not have been originally supportive of the Syrian government, given the choice of that or these completely reactionary forces who have no interest in providing anything, except the most extreme forms of repression, they choose to go wherever the government seems to be holding on. So this is a really disastrous war, and you really feel it. But at the same time, this is what has allowed the government to hang on, because they see what'll happen if they collapse. Mm-hmm. They look what happened in Libya, and they know that this is really a fight to the death.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.